Welcome to the Model Railroader, your ultimate destination for all things railroading. From trains.com, we bring you step-by-step modeling and construction projects, insightful reviews, tips from the experts, and more. This program is proudly presented by Aftersight, a community hub for audio news, entertainment, and resources. Find us at aftersight.org. This program is intended to be used solely by individuals who are blind or have low vision. All aboard!
Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul. Today, we will be reading the following articles: News and Reviews, and Ask Model Railroader. The first section is News and Reviews, conducted by Cody Grivno and Bryson Sleppy. Atlas N-Scale EMD GP40-2. Atlas Model Railroad Company has released a new run of Electromotive Division, or EMD, GP40-2 diesel locomotives in N-Scale. The model, part of the Master Line, features plastic and die-cast metal construction, a scale-speed motor, and directional golden-white light-emitting diode lighting. Between April 1972 and November 1986, EMD built 903 GP40-2 diesel locomotives. The four-axle road locomotive, rated at 3,000 horsepower, had a turbocharged 16-cylinder 645 E3 diesel engine, an AR-10 alternator, and D77B traction motors. Canadian Pacific 4650 was built as Boston and Maine No. 308 in 1977. The unit was then sold to Helm Financial Corporation, becoming HATX 501 in the 1990s. The four-axle unit was traded by the leasing company to Canadian Pacific in 1999, becoming the 4650 in April 1999. The diesel operated for a time in a patch-out scheme. In late 2013 to early 2014, it was repainted at Railroad's Binghamton, New York shop in a non-standard CP scheme. Canadian Pacific retired the 4650 in May 2018. The injection-molded plastic body on the Atlas GP40-2 consists of the cab, body, handrail/walkway, and sill unit. Many of the details are molded, such as the grab irons, lift rings, and uncoupling levers. The Sinclair antenna on the cab and the three-chime air horn on the long hood are freestanding parts. The full-size CP4650 had front and rear ditch lights, a bell between front truck and fuel tank on the brakeman's side, and a snowplow on the front pilot, details not found on the model. I gently wiggled the shell while lifting up to separate it from the split-frame chassis. The scale-speed motor and flywheels are centered in the chassis. The ESU soundboard is on top. The fuel tank, with its sight gauges and filler caps painted red, clipped to the bottom. Our sample is neatly painted red and black with crisp separation lines between colors. The step edges, grab irons, and uncoupling levers are picked in white. The molded ratchet handbrake is black. The front number boards are black with white numbers. The rear boards are the opposite, as on the prototype. The white sill stripes are a bit thick compared to those on the full-size unit. The separation lines between the white handrails and red stanchions are a bit fuzzy, but could be fixed with fine brush and some white paint. I tested our decoder-equipped sample using an NCE power cab. At step 2, the model moved at 4 scale miles per hour. The locomotive achieved a top speed of 100 scale miles per hour. The speed range on the prototype ranged from 71 to 83 miles per hour, depending on the gear ratio. The model's dimensions closely followed data published in the 1974 edition of the Car and Locomotive Cyclopedia of American Practices, published by Simmons Boardman Publishing Corporation. If you're in the market for a four-axle road unit for your N-scale layout, you'll want to check out the Atlas GP40-2. The full-size diesels have been around since the early 1970s, and many examples can still be found on Class 1, regional, and short-line railroads today. Signed, Cody Grivno, Senior Editor. Facts and features. Price. Direct current with factory installed speaker, $134.95. With dual mode ESU lock sound V5 sound decoder, $244.95. Manufacturer. Atlas Model Railroad Company, 378 Florence Avenue, Hillside, New Jersey, 07205, or online at shop.atlasrr.com. Era, mid-2010s to 2018, as decorated. Road names, Canadian Pacific, Burlington Northern, CSX, Florida East Coast, Guilford Rail System, and Norfolk Southern. 2 to 3 road numbers per scheme, also available undecorated with and without dynamic brakes. Features: body-mounted AccuMate couplers at correct height, metal wheel stubs on plastic axles, correctly gauged, weight 2.8 ounces. Bachmann HO Siemens Venture Coach. Amtrak's newest passenger equipment is now available in HO scale. Entering service in 2018, Siemens has already built more than 100 Venture cars for service with Amtrak, Brightline, and Via Rail Canada. The company is also under contract to deliver more equipment to existing operators and Ontario Northern Railway. Correction, Ontario Northland Railway. The full-size cars made their debut in the United States when All Aboard Florida, now Brightline, purchased 5 train sets and 10 Siemens SCB-40 Charger diesel locomotives. The Venture Series cars were adapted from Siemens Viago Comfort cars, which are used in Europe. Construction of the Venture cars began in July 2015 at Siemens factory in Florin, California, and continues today. Bachmann's HO scale Siemens Venture passenger car is available in 2 different body styles, coach and business class. 2 railroads are represented in the manufacturer's first run of cars, Amtrak Midwest and Via Rail Canada. The Amtrak Midwest cars are only offered as coaches. Via Rail Canada cars are available as coaches, business class, and a cab car. The models match Bachmann Siemens SC-44 and SCV-42 Charger diesels, sold separately, that the prototype cars are typically run with. The sample we received is decorated as Amtrak Midwest number 4008, a coach class car with Illinois Department of Transportation, or IDTX, reporting marks. Though Amtrak owns the locomotives and passenger cars in its long-distance trains, the Venture coaches in Midwest service are owned by the Illinois Department of Transportation. The model's paint is smooth and evenly applied. It closely matches that of the prototype, with crisp lines and legible markings. The metal grab irons, uncoupling levers, and doorsteps are separate, factory-applied parts. Molded details, including the antennas, equipment hatches, plumbing, and train line receptacles, are appropriately located. The car's interior is molded in gray plastic and features 70 seats with a prototypical aisle width of 24 inches. The windows are untinted sheets of separately applied clear acetate. With the optional included close couplers, the car's length matches the prototype length of 85 feet. However, the width and height of the car are short by around 6 inches each. The floor height above the top of rail and the door width, 51 inches and 34 inches respectively, both match the full-size car. The distance between truck centers is a prototypical 59.5 feet. When it comes to lighting features, the Bachmann model has everything that a passenger car could need. The interior is illuminated by constant light-emitting diode, or LED strip, suspended above the seats. The lights are always on. In addition to interior lighting, the car has selectable end marker lights. These LEDs are on both ends of the interior lighting board, with red lenses installed in the shell. A note on the underside of the car and the arrangement of roof details designate the end of the car where the marker light control panel is located. To activate the markers, a hatch cover next to the exhaust fan must be removed. 2 switches are under the cover. One toggles the marker lights on one end of the car, while the other toggles the markers on the opposite end. When finished, the cover snugly fits into place. The interior and marker lights operate on both DC and DCC. Due to the pickup whiskers contacting the back of the wheels, the car isn't free rolling. However, the correctly gauged blackened machined metal wheel sets ride in finely detailed trucks, matching the prototype. The couplers are slightly lower than National Model Railroad Association, or NMRA, standard S-2. The car weighs 5.8 ounces, 1.2 ounces less than NMRA recommended practice 20.1. Bachmann's HO scale Siemens Venture coach is a great representation of this contemporary car. The factory installed interior and marker lights add to the value of the model and make it truly ready to run. A consist of Venture cars running behind a Bachmann Charger locomotive would make an impressive modern Amtrak train. Signed, Bryson Sleppy, Associate Editor. Facts and features. Price, $139 to $149. Manufacturer, Bachmann Trains, 1400 East Erie Avenue, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 19124, or online at bachmanntrains.com. Era, 2022 to present, as decorated. Road names, Amtrak Midwest, parentheses, coach, four road numbers, close parentheses, and Via Rail Canada, parentheses, business and coach, two numbers each, close parentheses. Features, Bachmann Easy Mate Mark II couplers, 10 thousandths of an inch to 20 thousandths of an inch too low. Blackened machined metal wheels with RP25 contours in gauge. Weight, 5.8 ounces. Pico Smart Control WLAN DCC System. Pico is a well-known European manufacturer of HO and large-scale model railroad equipment. However, it also produces a line digital command control, or DCC, products, ranging from decoders to complete systems. Recently, we received a sample of the company's newest DCC system, the Smart Control WLAN, or Wireless Local Area Network, introductory set. What you get? The Smart Control WLAN set offers a number of advanced features commonly found on more advanced and expensive DCC systems. Chief among these is wireless remote control via the Smart Control throttle. The throttle connects to the base station by its own network. Up to four can connect at once. The command station, shown at top center above, delivers 2 amps to the main track and features short circuit and overload protection. This enables multi-train operation of up to 5 trains, parentheses depending on the scale, close parentheses, without having to use additional boosters, which are available separately. Track power is controlled primarily by the output voltage of the power supply, which is 16 volts DC at 2 amps. However, due presumably to power use by the Smart Control WLAN system, I measured 15.7 volts. The rectifier circuit in the decoder should drop the motor voltage down to about 15 volts. Locomotive control, editing, and programming is done with the Smart Control wireless throttle via the system's self-contained Wi-Fi network, or by connecting the system to an existing home network in station mode. The throttle is powered by a 3.7-volt lithium-ion battery that can be recharged with a USB-C cable, both included in the set. Getting started. Setup is quick and easy, requiring only a connection to the main track using the screw terminal connector, plugging in the power supply, and turning on the throttle using the stop button. Since this was the first time I had to pair the throttle with the base station, which required pushing a couple of buttons when prompted on the screen. Next, I put an Atlas HO scale Alco RS11 diesel locomotive on the track. Since the 4-axle road switcher had a RailCom Plus capable lock sound decoder, the address and description popped right up on the throttle's display screen. Pressing 0 turned on the headlight, 2 activated the air horn. The large red throttle knob below the screen made it easy to control the speed. When I double-tapped the knob at step 0, it reversed the direction of travel. The central location of the control knob makes it convenient for left or right-handed users. The Pico Smart Control WLAN is a highly capable introductory system with the ability to be expanded and upgraded as your needs increase. I appreciated the ergonomic design of the throttle and the extensive manual that leads you through the process of learning the menu system. Signed, Larry Puckett, Contributing Editor. Facts and Features. Price, $259.99. Manufacturer, Pico America, 4610 Alvarado Canyon Road, Suite 5, San Diego, California, 92120. Online at pico-america.com. Features: 16-volt DC 2-amp power supply. Railcom Plus implemented. Service mode and programming on the main. Supports up to 61 functions. Up to 4 throttles on the network. The next section is Ask Model Railroader. Which trains worked the beer line? Question: I am modeling the Milwaukee Roads beer line in HO scale. Which trains worked the beer line, and what were the train numbers they used? I can't find any information on the internet. They didn't just call them, quote, midnight beer train, or, quote, elevator job, did they? Answer: the transfer runs that shuffled cars between the beer line and the Milwaukee Roads main yards downtown might have had train numbers assigned to them, but if they did, they've been lost to history. I can't find any mention of these trains on any of the employee timetables in our library. It's likely that they ran as extras. However, I can confidently say that the numerous switch jobs that did the actual work on the beer line were not numbered. The Chestnut Street Branch, as the beer line was formerly called, was all within yard limits. A number of small yards were dotted along the branch. Each of these yards ran multiple switch jobs that served the industries in their vicinity, with names like North Milwaukee District Job, the Gibson Job, the quote-unquote C House Job, the Elevator Job, and the Freight House Job, parentheses, those last three out of the Humboldt Yard, close parentheses. These local switch jobs each served only a particular group of industries, so they stayed out of each other's way. They would then return to their yards and assemble them into the next beer train. Though the Chestnut Street branch was only 6 miles long, it was the busiest branch line on the Milwaukee Road. Each beer train typically handled 60 to 100 cars. Despite the line's nickname, Schlitz was the only brewery directly situated on the tracks. Pabst Brewing had a grain elevator near the Schlitz complex, but it trucked grain from there to its brewery several blocks away, then trucked finished beer to Pabst Shipping Center No. 30. Blatt's had no structures on the beer line, but shipped its products from the Lincoln Warehouse at the end of the line branch. But beer wasn't the beer line's only business. There were close to 100 rail-served industries on the branch. The American Motors body plant was the biggest non-brewery source of traffic on the branch. The huge Continental Can Company plant received rolls of sheet metal and shipped boxcars of finished cans. Union Refrigerator Transit Lines, or URTX, had a large shop facility. The Commerce Street Power Plant received many loads of coal. Tanneries, metal fabricators, food distributors, coal dealers, warehouses, and lumber yards were other common industries along the line. For more information about the beer line, you can read a longer version of this answer on our website at trains.com/MRR/beginners/ask-trains/which-trains-worked-the-beer-line. Question: I have a great affinity for turnaround operations and am designing a new N-scale layout that might feature several of these operations. How do the crews manage to reattach the caboose on the end of the train for the return leg where there's only one siding? I have studied the Clinchfield Railroad's Moss Turn for hours and still can't figure out how the caboose was reattached in the correct position. How did the crews manage this? Signed, Jim Werling. Answer: that depends on what turning and runaround facilities are available there. A Y, or a turnback loop, aka balloon track, simplifies matters, of course. allowing the engineer to turn the entire train. But it's not unusual for there to be no turning facilities at the end of a branch line. That's especially true where right-of-way is in short supply, such as a mining or logging line in the mountains or an industrial switching district in a crowded city. If that siding you asked about is a double-ended passing siding, not a single-ended spur, the engineer would pull into the siding and uncouple from the train, then run around it on the main. He would then pick up the caboose from the end of the train, back up, switch to the main, shove forward, and drop the caboose on the main past the passing siding's other turnout. Next, he would back up on the main, line both turnouts for the passing siding, and shove the train onto the main until it couples onto the caboose. His train is now in the correct order for the run back the way it came. There is still a problem, though. The locomotive and caboose are now facing backward. That's not that important to a diesel hood unit, but if the motive power is a steam engine, low visibility past the tender makes running backward kind of awkward. It can be done, though, and has been done on the prototype. But if there's a turntable or Y available at or close to the end of the line, the engineer will use it to turn his locomotive before departing for home. Now, if there isn't even a runaround siding, just a stub-ended industrial spur, the train might have to start its journey home with a long shove maneuver, with a caboose and the rest of the train ahead of the motive power. The conductor would ride the caboose's end platform and guide the engineer by radio, parentheses, or in steam days with hand or whistle signals. Cabooses were equipped with whistles when necessary, close parentheses. In this case, the engineer would take the first available opportunity to put his locomotive, cars, and caboose back in the right order. Question: I'm considering converting my N-scale diesel fleet to DCC. I have a concern about the sound. On videos I have watched, the diesel acceleration and running sound seem to feature the high-pitched whine of the diesel generators. When I railfan real diesels, I mostly hear the deep-throated rumble of the diesel exhaust. I'm not sure I want to upgrade to sound when the available sound systems are, to me, not a realistic depiction of what I love about diesels. Is there any alternative to standard sound decoders that features a low-pitched rumble? Signed, Jim Whirling. Answer: I'm afraid that a speaker small enough to fit in a model locomotive just can't produce a realistically low-pitched diesel rumble. So what's the solution? Get a bigger speaker. I know of a few ways to do this. Model Trains manufacturer Broadway Limited Imports offers a system called Rolling Thunder. It consists of a large diameter subwoofer in an enclosure, a receiver box that mounts under the layout, and a transmitter chip that's included in the company's Paragon 3 and Paragon 4 DCC decoders. I have tested Rolling Thunder-equipped BLI locomotives in the Model Railroader workshop, and the low frequencies are impressive. The drawback is that Rolling Thunder is a proprietary system that only works with BLI Paragon 3 and Paragon 4 equipped locomotives. It also only works with one locomotive at a time, whichever is closer to the receiver. If your layout runs on a Digitrax DCC system with LocoNet, there's a more versatile option available, though it is a bit less plug-and-play. Soundtrax makes a system called SurroundTrax DSP-80 that plugs into the layout's control station and echoes your DCC sound-equipped locomotive's sound effects through up to 6 speakers, parentheses, or 5 in a subwoofer, close parentheses, that you set up under the layout. This system only works on a LocoNet-equipped DCC base station and requires locomotives with DCC decoders that support transponding. The system also doesn't come with speakers, requiring you to install them yourself. The final way to do this is a completely homebrewed solution. Install a traditional stereo amplifier and speaker system under your layout, then hook up a sound-only decoder to the layout's DCC bus and wire its outputs into the amp's auxiliary inputs. Program the decoder to the same address as a locomotive, parentheses, basic consisting, close parentheses, and let it play the locomotive sound through the speakers. The biggest limitation of this approach is that it would only work with one locomotive at a time, whichever one is consisted with a decoder hooked up to the amplifier. Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul.
You've been listening to the Model Railroader, brought to you by Trains.com. That's TRANES.com, in collaboration with AfterSight. If you've enjoyed this episode, we invite you to visit our website at AfterSight.org for more audio editions and original podcasts. For additional inquiries or to contact us, call us at 303-786-7777 or email contact@AfterSight.org. Thank you for listening. Thank you.